Hello, welcome back to TL Talks Podcast. I am TL. As usual, it's good to have you guys. So, starting off with the thought of the day. My thought of the day is kind of two parts. The first part is a random thought, and then the second part is a continuation of the coronavirus that we're dealing with currently. So, first with the coronavirus, just kind of an update. So I've talked to you guys about kind of how I try to look at things in life and try to find the positive in anything that's going on. So with coronavirus, I try to made it a point to clean more, read more, get stuff done with my credit and stuff like that for a refi. And what I've noticed is coronavirus has had kind of like an opposite effect on me. It's not anything too bad or to be worried about, like depression or anything. But it just feels like it's a lot easier to be lazy during this pandemic. Even though intellectually I know that doing things like cleaning and reading and working on my credit is going to be more beneficial for me and more productive for me, it's much easier for me to, go to work, take Jackson for walks, and then with the rest of my time, play a video game or watch something on Netflix. So it's not good. unfortunately, that is much easier to do. And so I need to reframe somehow. I need to have more of a sense of urgency about doing those other things I mentioned and kind of put video games and Netflix on the back burner a little bit. And so I'm trying to figure out that balance. For a lot of you listening, this is probably the first pandemic of your lifetime too. So uncharted territory, and how to deal with that as far as, just kind of figuring out how you're going to live your life and how you're going to spend the hours of your day is just all things we're trying to figure out. So I guess the good news is I have enough foresight to know that the three things that I mentioned would be the best way to use my time. And some people probably don't have that. They probably just would be content with drinking alcohol or playing video games or watching movies or Netflix, and they wouldn't think twice. And so I'm glad that I want to do more than that, but wanting to do it and doing it are two different things. So I kind of need a swift kick in the ass to get some stuff done, and nobody's going to kick me in the ass. So I have to be self-motivated. So I'm going to work on that. But I did accomplish one goal for this week, and that was, releasing my podcast on time. So I think it's just like anything else in life. It's all about making priorities, right? So if it's a priority for me to record before Friday night so I can release at the, agreed upon time of 8 p.m. on Fridays, then I'll make it happen. If it's not as much of a priority, or if I procrastinate, stuff during the week, then it makes it less and less likely that I can meet that deadline. So I succeeded this week. It is currently Friday morning before I have to go to work. So I did it. Not much time remaining, but I got it done. So that's good. Second part of my thought of the day before I move on to football is about, and this is kind of random, but I think you guys will see where I'm coming from. It's about loving something too much. So I, as most of you know, I have a dog that's pretty much my best friend. His name is Jackson. And I think he's about maybe 4 or 5 years old. I don't know. I'm not very good with keeping track of time. But, so he's about 4 or 5 years old. I've had him since he was a puppy. And he's my best friend. He is, like, how much I love him and care about him is crazy. Like, he's like literally my best friend. He's my shadow. He loves me unconditionally, sleeps with me every night. I mean, he's almost the perfect dog. I know that I'm going to sound biased, but like, honestly, he doesn't have that many bad habits. And so, yeah, I just love him like crazy. Well, that's awesome. And the fact that I have an awesome dog and he's cute and stuff is obviously cool. But the thing that worries me is when I think about how much I love Jackson. Before I got Jackson, I remember thinking to myself that if people died in my life, most people, when they died, I'd be okay. You know what I mean? Like, I would be sad, of course, and mourn people's death depending on how close they were to me. But most people, I'd be okay, you know, after a certain amount of time. The only person that was exception to that is my mom. My mom was pretty much, because she means so much to me, she's the one person that didn't really want to ever die. And selfishly, I'd rather that I died before her. Just because I don't really want to, you know, experience that. So that's how I felt about my mom for the longest. Well, now that I have Jackson, unfortunately, that list went from 1 to 2. So now I feel the same way about Jackson. Now I'm thankful and loving every minute that I spend with him, but I'm also terrified of the thought of him ever dying. Whether it be, you know, tomorrow, something crazy happening, him getting hit by a car or something, or, you know, him dying like after living a full life. Both of them are equally terrifying. I don't think I would ever be ready for him to die, per se. And I don't know. It just, I have such a big bond with him. It just is a really scary thing. So I don't know, man. I'm just kind of sharing how I feel. He just means that much to me. And so I'm not sure what I'll do. I'll be honest with you guys. If there ever is, I know that sometimes I'll miss a week for the podcast if things don't work out. But if my mom passed away or my dog passed away, you guys might not hear from me for a while. And I'm not really sure how that looks, to be honest with you. That's one of the very few things in my life that I can't really explain how I'd react. And so, you know, it's just scary, man. It's scary to think about those things. But yeah, I want to share that with you guys because it's kind of like it's half and half. Half of me is just so thankful that I have an awesome dog and he's my best friend. And dogs are so much better than humans, and they're great companions. And I get to experience that, you know, unconditional love while I have them. But then the other half of me is just terrified of the day that I lose them. And I know that I shouldn't be focusing on that because I should just focus on what the time that I have with them. But it's hard not to. It's hard to know that, you know, dogs don't live as long as humans. And you know, time flies, and I don't know, it's a tough reality. So I'm not sure how I'll deal with that. I know that I would be devastated if either of them passed away. I've thought about, you know, when Jackson gets older, maybe getting another dog. So there's not, you know, so there's not any gap in, having a companion, but then again, you know, you get another dog, there's no guarantee, that dog will have the same bond, you know, probably not. I mean, dogs are different creatures, but, you know, that dog could be a dog that misbehaves a lot. It could be a dog that isn't affectionate like Jackson is, you know, it just could be less compatible. So, that's also scary, but, yeah, I mean, it's interesting how loving something too much can be terrifying. And I think that is something that can be extrapolated to a lot of people's lives, whether it's how much they love their spouse or their kids or their animals, you know, or their parents, etc. It's just one of those things. There's no way around it. You can't love something that much without being a little bit scared in the back of your mind of losing it. And that's just part of life. So just trying to sort through that. I would hope that I make some kind of progress on how I'm going to deal with that whenever it happens. But as of right now, I got no answers. I just pretty much want my mom and dog to live forever. Moving on to football. So I don't think I have much to update you guys with as far as the Browns. I want to say the only thing they've done since I last talked to you was they picked up this defensive end named Adrian Claiborne, who he's not bad. I mean, once again, I've agreed with all the moves the Browns have made. So I think Adrian Claiborne could be our starting defensive end if we get rid of Olivier Vernon, or he could be a solid backup for Vernon and Myles Garrett if we keep Vernon. So once again, I agree with that move. Everything that this front office has done, I've agreed with, which is awesome. It was kind of a change of pace for me as a Browns fan. And so I can't wait for the draft, partially because it's football, so I love football, but partially because with the coronavirus pandemic going on, you know, we're kind of starved for sports. So getting to watch the draft, even if it's a virtual draft, seeing who my team gets, seeing who other teams get, you know, especially in the AFC North, that's going to be a good time. So I'm very eager to see who the Browns get, especially at number 10. I would assume it's going to be an offensive tackle, but you never know. So that'll be here before you know it. I want to say the draft is like the end of April. So I think a couple weeks from now. So it'll be here before you know it. So I can't wait for the draft. Last but not least, before I move onto my guest, is a Bandits update. So many of you know I am a coach of the Denver Bandits, who are a women's tackle football team here in Denver, Colorado. And this pandemic, unfortunately for us, has paused our season. So we're all ramping up, you know, with months of practice and working out and studying to get ready to play football in April. And now we're in April, and no football is happening for obvious reasons. So that's pretty tough to swallow, man. We're all kind of just waiting for to see how long the pandemic's going to last and when we can play games. But, it's just not an easy thing to deal with. I will say that my team has done a good job of staying in touch. We're trying to set up some, you know, video visits online. You know, whether it be coaching meetings, meetings with the defense, meetings with the offense, just finding ways to be innovative and stay in touch and still have our players engaged in learning. So I think we're doing a good job of that. We just had our first team workout online. I think that was on Wednesday. So that was pretty cool. I heard there's about 20 players there. So that's not as many as we had at practice. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time to get people back into the swing of things. Because a lot of people are like me. They're just being lazy. It's human nature. But I think it's just a matter of time. I think that our team is very dedicated. And it's just going to take a little bit of time to get everybody back into the swing. And so that'll be good. But one last thing about my team before I move on to my guest. One of our owners, John, he mentioned that their intentions are to play football in 2020. And so however that looks, whether it's, you know, playing games, playing WNFC games, playing some, you know, exhibition games versus teams that are close by. However that looks, they want to make it happen later on this year once the pandemic slows down. So that's pretty awesome to hear, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if other teams have that same intent, but we do. And the fact that our owners are making it a priority to make to play games, regardless of how we need to work that out, is pretty awesome to hear. It's very encouraging, you know, as far as morale goes, to know that it is their intention to seek out at least, you know, two or three games later on this year to play, so that this season isn't, or this year isn't completely lost. So shout out to them. Without further ado, my guest this week is a gentleman by the name of Casey Kozlowski. He's from Ashtabula County in Ohio, like I am. He was one of the many people who was tagged on Facebook for when I had that post about looking for somebody in politics. And he is a really, really awesome guy. Once again, really cool interview. I got to learn a lot. He was a former representative in Ohio, and he's a current commissioner in Ohio that is an elected position. So pretty cool, man. He has a cool story. I love that he wasn't really political growing up, and then he had no desire to get into politics. And then here he is, you know, being the commissioner in Ashtabula County. So really interesting story, really, really interesting guy. Great conversation. Hope you guys enjoyed as much as I do. So without further ado, here is Casey Kozlowski.
Casey Kozlowski to the TL Talks podcast. Casey, I know you're a busy guy. We tried to hook up last week. But first and foremost, thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. It's great to be with you here today.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So, like I was telling you, I usually always start with how we know each other and, your background. So with, how we kind of crossed paths was I posted on Facebook about a month ago. I'm just saying I was looking for some people to interview that, you know, kind of are involved in politics. And I made the post public so people could tag people. And you were kind of a friend of a friend that had tagged you. And so I added you back then. And then fast forward until now, my first two political interviews were guys that were Democrats. And then my third one was a young gentleman that lives in Georgia who's a pretty hardcore Republican. And I was like, well, just so I do my due diligence, I want to make sure it's even.
Sure.
You know, two Democrats and two Republicans, just to cover all my bases. And so, yeah, I reached out to you. Then it worked out for this week. And so that's how we kind of know each other, through a friend of a friend. So, yeah, my first question for you, Casey, is just your background, man. I'd like to know, you know, kind of where you're from, and especially politically, you know, kind of what all led up to you being where you're at currently today. If you don't mind giving us some details.
Sure. So, yeah, it's great to be on, and way to keep it balanced. Absolutely. I'm glad I could, you know, participate here,
right,
here today. But just to give you a little bit about my background. I'm a lifetime resident of Ashtabula County. Grew up in the small little township of Richmond. Definitely know where that is. Went to school at Pine Mitchell Valley in southern Ashtabula County, in Andover. Of course, graduated there. And the son of a small business owner, my mom a homemaker, my dad the business owner. Grew up with two other siblings, both younger than me. Mm-hmm. Really, my foray into the kind of the political arena started at a very young age. I actually ran for school board at the age of 18, and that was just a few months after I had graduated high school. You know, I have to say, you know, growing up, I never thought I'd be in the public service arena. Never really liked politics at that time, to be honest with you, nor public speaking. You know, felt that it was an opportunity for me to give back, make a difference in some way in the community. And that's what, you know, kind of, you know, drove me to run for school board at that time. Was very fortunate, was elected, seat, someone that had previously served on the Board of Education, and it's really taken off from there. Since then, I've had the good fortune of serving in the Ohio Legislature as a state representative and as a county commissioner. So it's really been quite the ride, and it's hard to believe that in my short adult life that I've had the privilege of serving in several capacities in the public service arena. But I've truly enjoyed it. It's been a great experience.
Wow. Okay. So first question. Hope this isn't too nosy, but how old are you? Because last guy that I interviewed, Will Carter, who's a Republican in Georgia, he's super young. I want to say he's 22 years old. So how old are you currently?
So I am 33.
Okay, you're 33. But you said you started with that one position quick, like right after high school.
I sure did, yep. Started when I was 18 years of age. Yes, it's hard to believe I've been at it this long, but yep.
Right on. Yeah, I'm 39, and I'm familiar with Palmetto Valley. I played for Edgewood High School.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm from Ashtabula as well, and, we played sports against PV and stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Not too far away, so I can relate.
Yeah, funny thing. Had I lived across the street, I would have actually went to Edgewood when I went to the Buckeye School District.
Oh, wow.
Right on the dividing line.
Literally.
Yeah, literally.
Close call, gotcha. Okay, so, the first thing that I noticed, what you're telling me about your background was you were kind of like me growing up. So I was raised, I mean, my parents weren't like that political, but I definitely knew that they were Republicans just by, having some, family dinner talks and stuff like that. But it wasn't really pressed on me too hard. And the reason I was always kind of like averse to politics, Casey, is because I always kind of viewed it as it always came across to me like it was the art of bullshitting, which don't take offense to that. It's just how it came off to me. And then also, more importantly, it always seemed very divisive, right? And so I'm not sure what your stance is on it, but I think that our country is just in a time, especially with social media, the country's just very divided in different ways. And so I know that human nature is like just naturally going to separate people to a certain degree. And I know in politics, people like to win and people like to be right. And, just like when you're a sports fan, you're rooting for your team against another team. that whole like mantra of us versus them, it's just kind of in our DNA. And so I think that kind of translates to politics. But I always kind of just avoided like the plague for the longest because of those reasons. And then, I served in the military in my later 20s. And then when I got out, I still kind of avoided politics for a while. But then more recently, I'm knocking on 40's door now. I've kind of come to the place in my life, Casey, where I realize that politics matter. I realize that policy matters. I realize that it can affect you on a micro and macro level. I understand that politics can affect the laws that we have, the changes in laws, what is pushed through or not pushed through. So just the realization of how much politics does affect our lives, whether we like it or not, just kind of led me to be like, okay, Terry, well, You avoided this stuff like the plague for your whole life. So do you want that to be how your whole life is? Or do you want to educate yourself and at least, be able to hold your own when it comes to who you're voting for or having the desire to vote or, just stuff like that. And so I'm not going to lie to you, it's been kind of overwhelming. I'm sure you can understand how that would be. Going from, like, knowing nothing to trying to educate yourself in something as complex as politics is. And so I definitely have quite a road ahead of me. But I have learned a lot in the three interviews I've done so far. And so hopefully I can just you know, keep that going as far as my knowledge. But yeah, man, my point was is just I grew up kind of like you, not very political. And then you obviously are very immersed in politics now. But that wasn't even really your intention. It just kind of what happened.
Right.
You know, you said like you've never been a huge fan of talking in front of people. And politics wasn't kind of what you're aiming for. But you know, life has a different course for you. Sometimes that's just the way things work out. That's pretty cool, man. I mean, that could have easily been me. If you know, things that went different in my life, you know what I mean? If I'm not political and then,
yeah,
I pursue a certain thing and I end up getting it, and then that leads to something else, and you know, it's all like a butterfly effect from there.
Yeah,
it's really cool, man. I have two really silly questions for you to start with, because I want to cover all my bases since I don't know much. My first question for you, based on your background, you mentioned that you were a representative.
Yes.
And also, you either hold or you held the title of commissioner. So
yes.
When I hear those terms, and hopefully you're a patient guy, they go over my head, right? Like when I go vote, especially, you know, on a local level, and I'll see these different things to fill out, and, you know, you're voting for the treasurer and the commissioner and the governor and all these different titles, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to be a guy that doesn't know much about politics and figure out what the hell those things even mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, what does that term even mean? What is that person doing? What is their primary job? So I guess starting from a grassroots level, if you don't mind, tell me as best as you can what the titles of representative and commissioner actually do.
Sure. So both great questions. And first, I do want to say that I definitely applaud you for wanting to get more involved and more in tune to the political arena, you know.
Yeah.
And I have to say that for me, you know, it's been an enlightening experience. And, you know, I think, you know, having had this opportunity to be in these positions for some time, it's provided, you know, I think a whole new outlook on what it means to be involved and how you can truly make a difference. And when you know, some people think, you know, oh, politics, you know, gosh, they never get anything done, this, that, the other thing, you know, having been in this position, you know, it's gratifying to actually be able to get something done and to be able to see that positive difference be witnessed by other people and for them to experience that. So it's really cool. But to get back to your question about the position, so state representative, you actually serve as a member of the Ohio legislature. So in Ohio, you have, in the legislative branch, you have both the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate. The Ohio House is comprised of 99 members. The Ohio Senate comprised of 33 members. And each represents a specific number of constituents, a specific number of residents in the state of Ohio. Ohio, roughly 11.5 million people. So in the Ohio House side, you're going to divide 11.5 million people by 99 districts.
Okay.
And for each respective district, you're going to serve roughly between about 115,000 to 120,000 people. And at that time, when I served in the legislature, that was Ashtabula in northern Trumbull County. And I was responsible for, you know, kind of representing my district, making sure that the residents' voice were heard in Columbus. And primarily my job was to help craft laws, to draft legislation in Ohio that impacted not only the people in my district, but people all throughout the state of Ohio. So, you know, that's primarily the role as a legislator, as a member of the Ohio House. The Senate, that's a little more of a prestige office because you're actually representing three times as many people. There are less members of the Senate.
Right.
You know, over there, it's one third of the Ohio House. So you're representing a larger district. But your job is just the same, to be responsible for drafting and voting on legislation when it moves through the chambers in Columbus. Now,
okay.
as a county commissioner, Much different. So that's the position I currently serve in now. Now, as a commissioner, I have no lawmaking authority. Primarily in my position as a commissioner, I serve as a member of county government that serves as the main administrative authority for the county. And I consider myself in this position more of a manager, whereas as a representative, I'm more of a legislator. So I effectively manage people and manage operations in the county. And that could mean any number of things, but primarily it centers around three points. We're the purchasing authority, the contracting authority, and the budgeting authority for all of Ashtabula County.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's interesting. My next question is, Are representatives and commissioners both elected positions?
Yes. So they are both both elected positions. In the legislature, rather, on the House side, it's 2-year terms, and you can serve up to 8 years. As a commissioner, it's a 4-year term, and you can serve as many terms as you wish. Hmm. But it is elected, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Right now, there's another chair here, so I, so sure. I have a chance at retaining this stuff. So you said there's 99 House slots for Ohio, right?
Yep.
And then 33 for Senate. The Senate?
You're correct.
Okay, and so that is, are those both based on population or counties, or how are those broken down into how many guests?
So in terms of the population breakdown, it's all drafted after every census. So every 10 years is when the districts will kind of get drawn up. There's a political process that completes how the district boundaries will look. And every 10 years they can change. For example, after I served in the legislature, it was changed. My district changed. It became an Ashtabula and Geauga County district versus the Ashtabula Trumbull County district. So technically the people you represent can change when the districts are redrawn every 10 years.
Okay. And so how many times did you experience that? Once or twice?
In my lifetime, really being involved in the political arena, I've seen the districts change twice.
Okay. And when that happened, was it just a few changes here and there, or was it pretty dramatic?
So I would say the
things getting shuffled.
Sure. So I'd say the changes were fairly mild. I think the district for the most part stayed relatively the same, but I can tell you there are other districts in other parts of Ohio that changed much more dramatically. And partly it's because you see population shifts, and also you see kind of some politics that play into this, because there's a desire to have certain areas within certain House districts. So that's where kind of the political component, I feel, comes into play a little bit.
Gotcha. And what about the Senate? Is that elected as well?
Yep. So the Senate is elected as well.
What are those terms?
And you can serve a maximum of 8 years, but they are 4-year terms versus 2-year terms.
Oh, okay. 4-year up to 8 years. Gotcha. My next question would be, so I hear, once again, we're back to Silly Terry with his naive questions. So, like, I hear terms, you know, like House Representative, the Senate, and then I hear them on, like, a national level, right? So then when I talk to other people, other guests that have worked in politics, they'll talk to me about how there might be somebody that does that on a state level or a national level,
yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so then that makes it even more confusing for me. So I'm like, okay, so how do they break those down, and how many of those are there? And so,
yes, yeah. I'm sorry.
So how does that work as far as the difference?
So on the federal level, it's much different. So the terms are different. So as a member of Congress, you in the House side, it's 2-year terms, but you can serve an unlimited number of times. And then on the Senate side, it's 6-year terms.
Mm.
So that differs, and it's because at the federal level, there is no limit. There's no term limits. So you can serve as many times as you want. Now, on the House side, there are 435 voting members on the House side. And on the Senate side, you have 100 senators.
Mm. Gotcha. 2-per state.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Just going to say, you're looking at a much larger body because in Congress, you're talking about your 535 people.
Gotcha. So with the commissioner thing, you said it's every 4 years it is elected, but there's no end date for it? That means that, like, if you're commissioner right now, in 4 years from now, would you have to be reelected, or would you just keep it?
Yep, so I have to be reelected. So I was reelected. I originally started in 14. I was reelected in 18, and I'll be back on the ballot in 2020.
22. Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay. Got it. Okay. That makes sense. So I guess my last question for that section of what I was trying to digest is you mentioned how when you were representative, you were very you're very much involved in the lawmaking process.
Yep.
And so, you know, like you said, you know, you're kind of, your position is directed towards a certain demographic or a certain part of the state. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of representing a certain amount of people.
Yes.
So my question for you, Casey, is how, when you were in that role, I know it's not current, but it wasn't that long ago. When you're in that role, how are you able to get a pulse on people? Like when it came to polling people or figuring out what people care about or what really bothers people or what needs to change ASAP, how are you able to get your pulse on that?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question, and it's something that I really pride myself in. And, you know, in order to get an effective pulse on the people you represent, you got to spend as much time out and about in the community talking to people. So that means attending, the church fish fries and attending the reverse raffles in the county, stopping into the car show, stopping into any number of our local businesses and restaurants, and having conversations with members of the community, getting the pulse on what are the issues that are important to them. That also could mean hosting town halls, where members of the public are given an opportunity to come ask questions and learn more about what's happening in the county or in the state. It could be teleconferences that are performed where, you know, it's kind of like a teletown hall type format where residents can participate and by phone and learn more about what's going on and have an opportunity to ask questions or express their concerns. So really, to be effective, you have to do that. And you have to spend time out and about throughout the community learning what people's issues are, what their concerns are, and then making sure that you effectively represent them in Columbus on those concerns.
Yeah, I gotcha. So I guess my next question would be, I'm going to go ahead and state the obvious. That sounds like a very hard job. To represent that many people and to do that much like of making the rounds, you know what I mean, and showing your face and talking to people and spending time with people. It doesn't sound like it's an impossible job. It just sounds like it's a very hard job. And so I guess my next question would be how, besides, you don't have to confirm that it's hard because it's obvious that it's hard, but I guess my first thing with my rational mind thinking about how to pull that job off if I was in those shoes is I'm thinking, okay, I know people pretty well, right? Like I went to school for psychology, then I went to school for social work. I have pretty decent people skills. And so what I'm thinking about like I'm kind of like taking a virtual tour through that job right now. I'm like imagining myself, you know, going to businesses and trying to get a pulse myself. And so I guess my question for you would be, do you view that position as something that was like getting that pulse was pretty attainable just by being diligent about making your rounds? Because I would say with human nature, there's just going to be some complexities, right? Like there's going to be just some things that aren't like, they don't go smoothly. So whether it be, you know, you're a Republican, you're dealing with Democrats, or there's a certain county that really cares about a certain problem, but nobody else does. You're obviously never going to make everybody happy. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. So what would you have to say about that part as far as the complexities of how easy or hard that job could be and about pleasing everybody when that's an impossible thing to do?
Mm-hmm. So, it's very tough, and you have to find that delicate balance. The delicate balance. At the end of the day, you're not going to please 100% of your constituents.
Never.
But if your constituency can agree with you 70, 80, 90% of the time, then I think you're doing a good job. You know, but there are going to be decisions you make that they're not going to be happy about. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality of the job. But you hope that that's going to be an exception to the rule more than, you know, the prevailing notion. So, you know, ensuring that you're effectively representing your constituents is important, and making sure that you communicate with them and keep them informed about what's going on. I think that's the key. And that could be any number of outlets. Of course, by being out and about throughout the community, that could be through a newsletter, that could be through the teletown halls or the in-person town halls. Mm-hmm. It could mean, you know, having a very active social media presence and being responsive to constituents' concerns. And that will go a long way in informing the public about what's going on, because many a times I feel that constituents don't always get an ample opportunity to know what's happening with their government, what's happening within the government. Right. And informing them, educating them, and making them aware of what's happening will go a long way. And that's always been something that I've always strived to do. And anybody that's looking to get into the political arena, I would stress that most certainly.
Mm. Gotcha. It's funny. I don't know if this is happening in Ohio too, but I live in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and they started this thing on social media where people go outside at 8 p.m. to howl. Have you heard about that?
No, I have not heard.
Yeah,
about that.
It's because of the coronavirus and make everybody crazy, and some people just do it. Yeah, so I literally hear people howling outside right now. But anyways, my next question for you, man, is this is good kind of a segue to the next question I had. Talking about the Senate and House, et cetera, I had an epiphany a couple weeks ago, and we're talking about, of course, you know, the presidential race right now, because Trump is up for re-election. So that's obviously, you know, what people are mostly talking about, because the national stuff is what gets the headlines. But
right.
I was talking about all that, and I was thinking about it, man, and I was like, man, so the more that I learn, kind of like, be careful what you ask for. The more that I learn, the more convoluted it almost seems. Like, it's kind of like, I'll talk to these people and they'll tell me, okay, so, you know, there's obviously the president has 4 years and then he gets reelected. He can do 8 years and then he's done. Well, first of all, it's my opinion that the fact that we have one person that has the title of president of the United States is ridiculous. Like, I feel like the title of President of the United States is not even a realistic term. Like, one person can't do all, like, run our country. But I guess at the same time, he is not doing it by himself. Of course, he has advisors and, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. I just think that, you know, like, the fact that we even have that title of President of the United States is kind of silly to me, because it's like, we have America, who's this awesome free country, tons of people, different states, different backgrounds, different, you know, red and blue, all over the place, different ethnicities. It's a, our country's a melting pot of people. So to have somebody try to run that effectively and make all those tough decisions, it just sounds like it's something that would just make you die faster, honestly. Like, I don't know how you could not be so stressed out with the weight of, you know, what that job entails. Now, that's just my opinion. That's just a little rant. But anyways, moving on to what I was going to ask you. So when I get to, like, Senate and House and stuff like that, then I talk to these people in past interviews. They've kind of went over some of the Senate and House stuff. It almost seems like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Casey, but it almost seems like, depending on who your president is, you know, or if they, you know, if Biden somehow won, or Bernie Sanders, or whoever the president is, they're going to fall, you know, on one of those sides, right? Republican or Democrat. But when you get into the details of, you know, who's in the Senate, who's in the House, is one of those, you know, is the majority, you know, red or blue, those things matter, right? Because when something is one way or the other, obviously they're going to be able to affect what they hear or don't hear when it comes to policy change. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that could either handcuff a president from doing what he wants to do, or it could definitely aid him in getting stuff done a lot quicker, you know, than if he has something going against him. So would that be fair to say that, as far as, yeah, the president is the president and he does have that title. He's the commander in chief of our country, but very rarely does a president have not only that title, but then also all this stuff in the background, like the House and Senate, et cetera, all lining up behind him, supporting him, so he can literally do whatever he wants to do without having to, you know, butt heads with people.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, great question. And you're right about the president. I mean, yes, as president of the United States, you have some authority. You know, there is that authority you have as a member of the executive branch.
Yeah.
But nine times out of ten, it's really limited in scope. In order to effectively get some of the major milestone type of initiatives done in the country that are really going to make a positive difference for residents throughout the country, you have to get other people on your side in order to effectively do that. And that's going to mean having a House and Senate that's going to buy in to the concept, to the idea, to the legislation, whatever it may be. And that's where, on the national level, things become very polarizing. And that's when things come to a screeching halt, because now you have that big Democrat-Republican debate. Well, the Democrats have to have this. We have to have this, that, and the other in order for us to support this legislation. Okay, well, Republicans say, well, you know what? We're not going to support that. And if we do, well, we have to have this, this, and that. I mean, so then you have everyone drawing their lines in the sand.
Right.
And then it becomes very...
Would you agree with that statement? And second of all, what would be your reason for agreeing with that?
So, you know, I still think that we're primarily structured in a way where it's a two-party system, but that could change.
Right.
And I think only time will tell. I think, you know, as things get more polarizing, you may see, you know, a strong third party that comes together. Is that going to happen in the next few years? Doubtful. I really don't think it will. But will that happen 10, 20, 30 years down the road? I would not be surprised one bit.
Yeah.
You know, we could have a third party that steps in. Or maybe that third party is more non-affiliated people winning public office and running for various seats at the local, state, or federal level. And that could mean, you know, that becomes, you know, much more prevalent nationally, and that could be a game changer. And that could really start, you know, knocking back at the two-party system that prevails here in our country.
Yeah, so you definitely agree that that's what it is currently. What would you say the reason for it being a two-party system? Would you say it's financial backing? Would you say it's human nature to be one or the other, or what would you say is the reason for that?
I think that, you know, there's the preconceived notion that it's, you know, that, you know, you have Democrat or Republican to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there, for a lot of people, that's probably what's on their mind. You know, well, it's Democrat or Republican. Those are my choices. And to be quite honest, when you're looking at a lot of these local races, and state and federal races, that's generally what you have to pick from. There aren't many other options. And I think for many years, for decades, our country's laws have almost been written in a way where it favors the two-party system. So that continues to prevail today.
Yeah, it's a factor. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. My next thing I want to mention to you is one of my other guests I talked to, he was ironically a Democrat, but I think the point still, it's a valid point because you guys have both said it and you guys are on different sides of the aisle. But he mentioned how, you know, kind of his story of how he got into politics and talked about how just going to, like, and you brought the same thing, that's why I'm bringing it up, just like going to a random town hall meeting, you know, locally and listening to what people are saying, maybe speaking up and saying something yourself or asking a question or getting the ball rolling on something. He's like, it's amazing what you can accomplish and learn by just going to a town hall. And he said that what he's found is that he's been able to go to town halls where he actually felt like he made progress on something. And that was like the most gratifying feeling for him to leave feeling like he actually made a difference. And so would you agree with that as far as that being a good avenue for kind of dipping your toe?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's one great opportunity for you to get more involved in the political process, mm-hmm. for you to be able to take, you know, what may sound like a very simple or a grandiose idea and perhaps making it a reality. You know, that absolutely is one venue that could be utilized to be able to get something done. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, so that's confirmed. And then my last thing I want to say about moderate before I move on is my question for you was, like, when we have people that are current president and former presidents, I've never been political, I don't know the answer to this, but in those scenarios, obviously, maybe all of them have always been either, you know, red or blue until today, currently. But my question for you is, how many of those presidents have been considered moderate on one of the sides where they're not, you know what I mean, far right or far left? Because I'm curious about that. Like, if I was running for office, I would definitely be moderate because I'm all about inclusion and working together and communicating and working through things. That's just the way that I'm built. I'm a good communicator, and I know that that's how you get progress made. Mm-hmm. So if I were in the political realm, I would definitely be considered moderate because of the way that I am. I don't feel bad about that. But I'm curious, from our history with the presidents, how many of them were considered moderate, if any?
You know, that's a great question, and I think everybody's interpretation of that is
an opinion.
And yeah, I think it's a matter of opinion. I don't know if there's any clear definition for what you know, a moderate would be, but it's a great question. And you know, I would almost like to think though that perhaps some of the presidents more recently are being perceived that way. Only because you're starting to see, you know, some of the presidents tackling some of these issues that are issues that kind of resonate with the opposite party. Mm-hmm. So, you know, could you argue that that makes them moderate? Possibly. But mm-hmm. then, you know, 90% of the policy initiatives they're pushing and focusing on favor their party and their platform.
Yeah.
So, is that really moderate or not? I think that's subject to interpretation by the voters and the people.
Gotcha. Yeah, then I guess the way that I look at it, and you can tell me if I'm off, but I look at it like there's
in politics, there's these people that want to be elected, right? So they're gonna be running for office. Obviously, they're going to be making the rounds. They're going to have town halls or whatever to get their word out, to get people on their side. Well, the problem I have with that is that whatever somebody's trying to sell you, when they're elected, there's really there's not much really holding them to keep their word. So when people are being, you know, candidates for a certain position, and they're like, you know, selling whatever they're trying to sell to people, and then they successfully get elected. And like you said, there's 2-year terms, 3-year terms, 4-year terms, 6-year terms. But in that time, how much of the stuff they follow through with or don't follow through with, I see a lack of accountability for that. Mm-hmm. And so we've had presidential candidates that have not followed through with things that they like kind of just hammered home during the whole election, like election process. We've had presidents that have followed through. But I guess the thing that doesn't sit well with me, Casey, is that regardless of how much you follow through or don't follow through, there's a lack of accountability for that. And so I think that's just a Terry thing. You know, I'm just, you know, I'm a dude from Ashtabula. My mom raised me a certain way, and she raised me to be a person of my word. So my yes is my yes, my no is my no, and you know, your word is kind of all you have. Mm-hmm. So that's just the way that I was raised and the way that I am. So that's probably why I care about it so much. But what would you have to say about that as far as the art of getting elected and telling people what they want to hear versus falling through with your promises?
So I would argue that we do have an accountability measure in place, and that accountability measure is your re-election.
Okay. Yeah. How so, long last? Yeah.
You know, so if you don't follow through, well, then the voters might kick you out.
Yeah.
You know, you promised this, you promised that. You said you were going to solve this problem, and we were going to get this building, you know, tore down, or we were going to fix this, or we were going to, you know, bring this new company to town. Mm-hmm. Maybe those things didn't happen, but now you're back up on the ballot, and now you have to go back to the voters and explain to them why this didn't happen or why that didn't happen. So I would argue that you do have, an accountability measure in place. Yeah. But in order for that to work, you have to obviously have people that are active, participating, and not afraid to question their elected leaders and those that are on the ballot and ask those tough questions.
Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That's a perfect segue to my next question. So I was talking to my uncle a night or two ago, and he brought up, we were talking about politics, because we were talking about coronavirus, and of course, like with the election thing with Trump and how people are so reactionary towards Trump, either for or against him. He just talked about that, and he brought up a point to me that I was completely ignorant to, which kind of baffles me, Casey, to be honest with you. So he's telling me about how, so Nancy Pelosi, right? I think he said she has the title of Speaker of the House, is that right?
Speaker of the House, yep.
Okay, so that's what her position is. Well, what surprised me was he told me that Nancy Pelosi is like, she's an elderly woman. I don't know how old she is, but she's up there. And he said that she has that title, but the funny thing about that title is that you have it like forever, basically. Like until you resign or you die, that's what you are. So that, if that's true, and maybe it's not, maybe my uncle just isn't very well versed, but if that's true, Casey, that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. So if this person is like having dementia or, you know, being completely ridiculous about how they're, you know, acting in a public forum or how they're attacking a certain person or, you know, whatever their agenda is, if that's the truth and that person just has that title until further notice, that makes no sense to me. That makes me feel like our whole political system as far as electing people and people having office for how long they have office for, is completely outdated, and it baffles me that it hasn't been changed. So how much of that is true, and what do you think of all that?
So I make an assumption here. I don't know exactly what he was, maybe trying to say, but my assumption is that that once that person holds that office, they will always be referred to as having had that title. So, for example, Barack Obama, president, former president of the United States,
right?
You could say, well, hello, Mr. President, even if while you're seeing him today,
right?
Because
right.
he served as president, even though he technically does not hold that title anymore. And I think the same could be said about the Speaker of the House. Hi, Madam Speaker. But even though she may not hold that title, whenever that, given time, whenever she should decide to retire and no longer serve in that role. That title would not carry on for them forever. To actually have the power comes with that title.
Mm-hmm.
That's limited.
Is Nancy Pelosi currently the Speaker of the House?
She is, yep.
Okay. And how long is that term,
So generally, a speaker's election will be held every 2 years, unless there were to be something that would occur within the respective caucus that would then, require an additional election. But generally, they will hold that seat for a 2-year time frame. Until their next election for speaker, and that generally will occur after every 2-year congressional election on the House of Representatives side.
Okay, so would it be fair to assume that there is no positions that are like that? What my uncle was describing, there are no positions where if you have it, you just have it forever. Like you just have it until you die or resign, basically.
Yeah, no, I cannot think of an instance where that were the case. The only position somewhat like that would be, like, for example, to serve as a justice of the Supreme Court on the federal level. Once you become a justice, you serve as a justice until something happens where you happen to be removed from office, which is extremely rare, but you were to retire. So you could be a justice for a long time, but eventually that position will come to an end. And you will no longer serve in that role.
Gotcha. Okay. Justice is the closest thing to that being a reality
that I could think of. Yeah.
Okay. Something you said earlier kind of stuck out to me because it reminded me of a football league that I'm involved with. So you were talking about when you were a representative and, you had to poll people and kind of represent them for, issues that they want to adjust or laws they want to get passed or, basically just represent them as far as their needs. So when you're talking about that, you mentioned making the rounds and talking to people in person and trying to get a good pulse on people. But you also mentioned that it was important for you to kind of get your point across to the people, right? So, like, let the people know that they're being heard. Letting them know that I know that these things need to be addressed. And then also, it's kind of like just giving them transparency, right? So, on your little, cheat sheet of the things that you want to address, kind of like your top 10 or whatever you have, you know what those are. So instead of holding that to yourself and having people guess what things you're going to address or what things you're trying to attack, instead being transparent and being like, hey, guys, this is what I'm hearing from you. And so these are people that attack, and then now we're all on the same page. There's no guesswork. There's no, hey, I think Casey cares about this, but he never really said it, so I guess there's a chance that I'm wrong. But that would be a fair point, right, the transparency?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the parallel that I would see, Casey, and you're going to love this, so I played football pretty much my whole life, and I started coaching football about 6 years ago. So when I moved out here to Colorado, I started coaching football, and
I got involved with this one league that is on, you know, pretty national level. They have teams from coast to coast. Then there was another league that started after that. And this is, you know, considered semi-pro football. And the thing about this new league, which they're called the WNFC, but the thing about that league that kind of blew me away was their transparency. And so I've been involved with semi-pro football for 6 or 7 years now. I've seen men's leagues, women's leagues. I've seen, you know, quite a bit in that amount of time. But what the one thing that I haven't seen is transparency. And so what was kind of really got me amped about this new league was everything was out in front of you. You know what I mean? They told you about their business plan. They told you about, you know, where money's coming from, where it's going to. There was no secrets. Like, they literally were just putting it all on the table. And I'd never seen that before. What that did, Casey, was it gave them so much credibility. You know what I mean? Because when you've never seen that before, then you're being dealt with the way you're supposed to be dealt with. You know what I mean? Like, you're an adult that isn't being kept, you know, in the shadows about stuff. That was so, like, refreshing. And so I'm sure you agree. I think that's just, it's like a psychology experiment. Like, this is the way people want to be treated. People mm-hmm. want to know what's going on. They don't want to get curveballs. They don't want to have to guess where you stand on things. And so that league is very successful. I mean, they're only in their second or third year now. They've already gotten sponsorships from Adidas, you know, and Rydell and stuff. And they're really, like, taking the world by storm. But I think I saw that parallel from what you were saying really rings true. I think that can be applied to a lot of things in life. But just the simple thing of being transparent with people and just giving them the truth, putting it all on the table so there's no guesswork. There's no, like, you know, Wizard of Oz, who's behind, like, the curtain on the side. You know what I mean? It's all in front of you. You know what you're dealing with. You know what to expect. They set out the expectations from the beginning. Then more importantly, they follow through with those expectations. I think that's just kind of like leadership principles that often get missed in our society. And so I really noticed that, how thrilled I am to be a part of that league. And then it kind of reminded me of what you were saying with how you know, kind of being this person who is like an ambassador for this, group of people. That's a pretty big job. I'm sure that there's a lot of weight that comes with that. But I thought that was a fair point to make because it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Transparency is so powerful.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing is, you know, it should be so straightforward that there be transparency in government, because at the end of the day, let's remember, government is of the people, by the people, for the people.
Yeah, supposed to be.
But it's amazing. It's supposed to be. But it's amazing how much happens in government, I feel, that the people don't really have a full opportunity to know what's going on.
Yeah, that's
a problem. That's a problem, because at the end of the day, the government is the very people that the government's supposed to be serving. So it's a two-way street here. And when they don't know what's going on, when they have concerns with what's going on, that's when it becomes troubling, because at the end of the day, it's supposed to be government of the people, by the people, for the people. We have to remember that.
Yeah, so in a perfect world, we would see that transparency in politics, which I don't think we'll ever see that day, unfortunately. But, you know, there would be no guesswork. We would just know what we're getting. We would know what somebody's real intentions are. There would be no wordplay. There would be no, you know, trying to win an election by tearing somebody else down. It would just be all about who you are, what you can do, and then following through with your word. It'd just be very straightforward. Then we can just pick. Now you don't have to sort through anything. You don't have to sort through who's a better debater and who's more quick-witted and, you know, who's got more dirt on somebody else. Like, all that stuff doesn't matter. Like, it's, you know what I mean? We're not in fifth grade. Like, what are you talking about? Like policies are what change things in our country. So, like, the fact that you're spending all your time in a debate trying to tear somebody down or outwit somebody or make somebody look bad, to me, that makes you look horrible. It makes you look like you're not qualified for a position. Like, you know what I mean? That's how you're spending your time debating against somebody else. What does that say about you? That means that literally you and your team decided this is how we want to spend our time. We have this much time to talk and have people listen to us on a national debate. We're going to spend that time trying to tear somebody else down. That doesn't sound great to me. It just sounds like, I don't know, I'm just ranting, but that's my opinion, man.
Yep. No, I get it.
Yeah. So last question before I let you go, I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you're on the East Coast, so it's much later there, but I would feel bad if I didn't ask you this because it's too good of a question to not ask. But I want to hear your 2 cents on the presidential candidates, if you're willing. Obviously, you know, Trump is our president, and according to the last guy they interviewed, who's Republican, he says Trump's going to win in a landslide. It's not going to matter. But we are in the middle of a campaign, and I think I saw on social media today that they said Bernie Sanders finally pulled out. So that makes Biden, obviously, the guy for the other side. So I want to hear your 2 cents on the candidates. Specifically, there's 3 or 4 that I'm really curious about. So obviously, Biden and Sanders, is no way around those two. They were the top two. But then also, I personally am a fan of Tulsi Gabbard, which I'm not sure how much you know about her, but I like her a lot. And then another guest I had on brought up Elizabeth Warren. So if you have any other, fourth person that you kind of like or don't like, that you want to add your 2 cents on, I'd love to hear it.
So, no, great question. I'm not sure who all is left on the Democratic side. Is Tulsi still in the race, if I may ask?
I don't think she is.
Is she not? Okay. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. She's been on for a while, but...
Yeah, it seems, at this point, that it's kind of a race between Trump and Biden at this point.
Yeah.
With Bernie dropping out. And really, I think Bernie was a casualty of what's been happening in our country over the last month or so, where Bernie obviously was not able to get out and campaign and get his message out much in the last month. And so few people now seem to be talking about the presidential race on the national level. The focus is really centered on the COVID-19 crisis, and there's so little talk now about the presidential race where, rewind 30 days ago, and everything was about the presidential race. So what I think you really have seen is it is the pendulum swing the other way, there's not much discussion about this race. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And how different this election is going to be, I think, than the 2016 election, from the messaging that will be used, and all of those things. Now, obviously, I'm a Republican, I also want to make clear that that doesn't mean that for my whole life I've always penciled in every single Republican on the ballot either.
Yeah,
I do my due diligence. I study up on the candidates.
I respect
and what's going to happen this election? Gosh, I don't know. I think if you would have asked me a month ago, I probably would have said President Trump would win by a landslide. But yeah. I think with what's going on in our country right now, I don't know. I don't know what's on the voters' minds, because now the conversation is going to be talking a lot more about how am I going to put food, bread and milk and all those things on the kitchen table. To feed myself and feed my family.
Right.
Where's my next paycheck going to come from?
Yeah.
All of those things. So now you're talking about those very issues, and I think that's going to really put this presidential race, front and center at some point. I don't know how it goes. It'll be interesting. It really will. But I think at this point, it's between Biden and Trump. We'll see how it shakes out.
So do you have any personal opinions about those candidates that you're willing to share?
So in terms of what? Like who I'm going to vote for?
No, like your opinions of Biden, your opinions of Bernie Sanders. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, okay.
Sorry if that's...
Yeah, that's all right. So, you know, there's some great ideas, I think, you know, that were exhibited on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
I wish we could talk a little more realistically on what could actually be done.
Right.
I think it goes to your earlier point about us talking about things and making promises on things that we aren't so sure we can actually deliver on.
Yeah, that's
absolutely. Awesome. I'd love, you know, to not have to worry about any student loan debt. Absolutely, I'd love to, you know, have to worry about any number of expenses.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just have to remember how does that get paid for and who pays for it. And I think those are all things that we all have to remember. You know, on the Republican side, obviously President Trump, you know, is he always diplomatic in how he speaks? Well, I think many you know, listening can, you know, have an opinion on that. But
yeah,
can you dispute?
It's an understatement.
Can you dispute some of the things that have been accomplished in our country? That you know, the economy over the last 3 years, up until just a month ago, you know. You can't dispute some of the successes either, but I think, you know, obviously, you know, there's that whole conversation about partisanship and Democrat and Republican, and somebody not liking someone and all those things. So, you know, I'm going to continue to just stay focused on my job and keep doing what I'm doing,
right.
But I of course will be in tune to this presidential race. So we'll see how it takes out.
Fair enough. Last question before I let you go, man. I've talked with a past guest in the political realm about voters and how they vote. And so the point that I brought up in past podcasts was it seems like there's some voter, this is all things I'm being told, so that I'm trying to process it, right? So from what I was told, it's kind of like, there's a voter that will find one issue that's paramount to them, or maybe like three issues, right? So they're like an issue voter. And so it's kind of like, if they agree with you on this one issue or these top three issues, then that's it. It's a done deal. Then there's other voters like myself that are more detail-oriented and are more comprehensive with the way that we think, that we want to more see the whole person and kind of all of their views, not just a top three list or a top two or top one. So my question for you is, I'm gonna add one more wrinkle in there, is it's been stated that there is issue voters. It's been stated that there is comprehensive voters that are going to look at a candidate and say, hey, I want to make sure that if I have 20 issues that I care about, that my candidate agrees with me on, you know, whatever, as many as possible. You know, it might be 16 out of 20 for this person, and then the next person is 8 out of 20. That's obviously a huge difference. So there's comprehensive, there's issue voters. Then there's a third one I just thought of that I want to bring up to you, because you mentioned that you're a Republican, but you have not voted for strictly Republicans in your past. So I've heard that before. I've heard how some people will just go to the ballot place and just, you know, right down the line, all red or all blue. That seems so idiotic to me. And I don't care if that sounds a certain way, because it's just how I feel and it is what it is. But I know that it happens, right? And some people just go all one side and they consider themselves that, and so they just go with that and it is what it is. That seems like the most lazy cop-out for a voting ballot that I can think of. But what is your opinion of those different voters, if you don't mind sharing? Or you just
sure.
It's human nature, it is what it is.
Well, sure. So, you know, yeah, you've got the party line voter, and there's some people that are just going to, you know, vote straight party line. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that happens, and it happens more than you think. That's why it's very tough for any third party candidate to win a race, generally.
That's part of the answer from earlier, yeah.
Yeah, because generally you're going to have 35% to 40% of Democrats voting straight for the straight down the line for Democrats.
Yeah, it's all
35% to 40% voting straight down the line for Republicans.
Right.
And then you've got the roughly other 20%, and those are the Republicans that are, you know, and Democrats that are more apt to switch parties and vote for the best candidate. And then you also got the independents, the unaffiliated voters. And that's where, you know, many times people will say, well, undecided and independent voters decide these elections. There's a lot to be said about that. Because there may be that 20-30% in an election that are going to decide that race.
Yeah.
So many times they're the deciding factor in so many of these races. I will obviously never tell someone how they have to vote.
Yeah, of course.
You're right. You're privileged to be able to decide how you want to vote. If you want to vote straight line party line, you certainly have that ability. That's not how I vote, but many times it's those that don't do that that are deciding these elections. Mm-hmm. I respect the ones wanting to, you know, do their research and vote for the best candidate, not just because they have a D or an R by their name.
Yeah, for sure, man. I guess my last question for you is, do you think there's any way to combat that? If we're saying that 40% of people will vote straight down the line blue, and another 40% will do straight down the line red, and you have 20 in the middle that just, you know, they'll pick who it seems is the best candidate. If that's the truth of our country, do you feel like there's any way to combat that, or it just is what it is? People are going to do what they're going to do.
Oh, no. I mean, I think that, you know, to our earlier point in the discussion, I think that may change down the road.
Okay.
I think, you know, there may be more people that are voting less party line and voting more for the candidate. That may become more of a reality down the road. And that may become more of a reality with a third party, too. It's quite possible. But I would still argue that our system seems to still favor that two-party system for the most part.
Yeah.
But that's probably smallly, you know, changing very smallly. That could become more prevalent down the road.
Gotcha. All right, fair enough, man. Sorry about the lingering questions at the end. It's kind of a, you know, politics is a rabbit hole. So I have more questions that lead to other questions. But
it's okay. I'm in politics. I'm used to questions.
Well, I appreciate your time, man. It's been cool to get to know you better. I assume you still live in Asheville County?
Sure do. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I usually come home during Christmas time, so maybe I'll be able to meet up with you and buy you
Absolutely.
Coffee or something.
That sounds great. Would love
it. Yeah, sounds good, man. Nice to meet you, Casey, and I'll definitely talk to you soon. I'll stay in touch. I have your number locked in my phone, so assuming that coronavirus isn't a thing around Christmas time, I'll hit you up when I'm headed home and hopefully we can meet up.
Great. Sounds good. Well, great talking with you, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Casey.
Thanks.
See ya.
There you have it. Casey Kozlowski. He was a current commissioner in Asheville County. Awesome conversation. Awesome guest. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And so I'll talk to you guys next week. As usual, always great to talk to you. And I'll talk to you soon.